Hi, I'm Wayne McPhail, and I was one of the people that originally started the Rabble Podcast Network, and I think that you should support the Rabble Podcast Network and Rabble.ca because there's no other place where you're going to get such a diversity of voices speaking truth to power.
The Rabble Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Show your support by going to www.rabble.ca/donate.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
To the Ends of the Earth is a new film that focuses its lens on the rise of more and more extreme forms of fossil fuel energy. The film follows a group of scientists, visionaries, activists, and authors as they work with a growing movement to fight climate change and the fossil fuel economy that drives it. The film crew travels to the regions where fossil fuels are being mined with dangerous and unconventional techniques, and it brings forward the voices of those who not only denounce the rise of extreme energy, but also envision an alternative path. David LaValle is the director and producer of To the Ends of the Earth, and he's here with me in the studio. Hi, David.
Hi.
Why did you choose that title for your film, To the Ends of the Earth?
Yeah, so To the Ends of the Earth is kind of a reference of where we're going to find oil and gas nowadays. It's not deep water anymore. It's ultra deep water, or it's the Arctic, or it's, geographical extremes in the Arctic, or geological extremes, for example, in the tar sands or in the Green River Formation of Utah, where they have this thing called oil shale. It's a rock that burns, basically. So To the Ends of the Earth can be both a geographical and a geological extreme. Richard Heinberg, one of the subjects in my film, who wrote a book called The End of Growth, he says, it's not your grandfather's oil industry.
Now, your previous film, Whitewater Black Gold, which won the Best Documentary Film, I believe it was at the Vancouver International Film VIF, the VIF in 2012, also covered some big geographical areas. And he used the narrative device of following a drop of water from the hydrological apex of North America in the Rockies, which I've been to at the Columbia Icefields, which is a beautiful place, down the Athabasca River via canoe towards the tar sands. What connections were you trying to make in that film?
Those connections sort of arose for me organically while working as a hiking guide. I'd take people on tours of in the Columbia Ice Fields, go and walk on a glacier, that kind of thing. I was sort of struck by the fact that I had a glaciologist on a hike with me one day, and he asked me, we were standing on the Athabasca Glacier, which goes in the Athabasca River, and he asked me if I knew where the river flowed and what was happening right then and there at the other end of the river. And I said, no. And he was talking about the tar sands and the water use up there. And he said, it's the largest withdrawal of water from an ecosystem on planet Earth, and no one's talking about it. And of course, he had intimate access to the numbers. He was a hydrologist, a glaciologist. And so he couldn't believe the numbers he was seeing coming out of there. And so I thought, this is really quite nutty. I haven't even heard about this. And at the time I lived in Alberta. So I decided to go on a journey following a drop of water to see what happens to it. And the connections are, it's sort of this cosmic thread of, being connected by a river from one of the most beautiful places in the world, Jasper National Park, to one of the ugliest places in the world, the tar sands. And so I was trying to make the link between those two places and how everything's interconnected in our world.
Now let's come back to the ends of the earth. What forms of extreme energy do you examine in the film?
Yeah, so in the film, I head up to Baffin Island, hung out with the Inuit up there. They have a traditional subsistence hunting practices. They're about 10,000 years old, and so they hunt seal and narwhal and things like that. And so they're quite concerned about what's going on because recently part of the push for this new extreme energy in the Arctic, it's happening in Canada as well as the U.S., in Alaska. But on Baffin Island, it's early stages. So what they're doing is seismic oil exploration. So they're kind of bombing the seabed with sound, like 10,000 times louder than a jet engine. And obviously that's having an impact on the eardrums of sensitive marine mammals that need to echolocate to find their way around the icy waters there. So Baffin Island was one of the places. I went to Utah as well, right near Canyonlands National Park in the U.S., or one of the best, most beautiful national parks in the U.S., mm-hmm. And there's a giant deposits of oil shale, Green River Formation, which the Green River itself is a tributary of the Colorado, a river that 36 million people depend on, including us indirectly in that we get, you know, vegetables from water that's Colorado River water in California. That's where our vegetables come from in the winter. So I went down there, and they're planning on building nuclear power plants in order to make oil shale. It's a rock that burns, and it's a type of energy, kerogen. It's an immature form of oil that essentially consumes more energy to make it than you get back in the refined fuels at the end. So I'm sort of asking questions in this documentary. Can we actually run a globalized economy on this kind of a resource, you know? And also, of course, I went to the tar sands a number of times, and the Horn River Basin in British Columbia, looking at energy chains of what the tar sand, I call it feeding the beast being the tar sands. What do you have to feed it with? You've got to feed it with coal, you know, strip mine coal to power the upgraders. You've got to do all kinds of, you know, natural gas, fracked gas now from the Horn River Basin, British Columbia. And yeah, so just looking at the energy chains and things like that.
Now, the film uses the model of an energy pyramid to illustrate that we've moved from readily available, extractable energy sources, like you used to think of the Texas, and there's big pools of oil, to what you're calling extreme energy and what you've described here. Walk us through that model and help us on radio visualize that pyramid.
Sure. Yeah, so if you could picture a pyramid, so it's called the resource pyramid, and it's actually an economist's tool that can apply to any industry, fishing, you know, forestry, whatever. So if you picture, you know, fishing or forestry, well, at first we get, you know, all our fish on the Grand Banks right beside us, and next thing you know, we're having to go up, you know, where there's large amounts of fish, but garbage fish that are at the bottom of the ocean. We're trying to, you know, mine the seabeds and all the rest of it. And so and the same thing with oil is you start at the top with good, clean, conventional oil, burns somewhat cleanly, provides lots of energy, doesn't require a lot of energy to extract it. For example, Saudi oil or conventional oil like we used to have in Alberta. And then as you exhaust those supplies, then you start moving into the much more difficult kind of resources. Next thing you know, you're mining your oil instead of drilling for it and, you know, bashing up rocks to get energy out of them. And so as you go down the resource pyramid, at a certain point you hit the point of both negative capital return on investment, so you just don't make money, and the oil industry in Canada is hemorrhaging profits, essentially, especially with the low oil price. And you also get negative energy return on investment. It requires more energy to make it than you get back. So further you get down the resource pyramid, ironically, there's more of those resources available, but the resources are garbage, and they can't fuel the huge globalized economy we've built here today.
And I think one of the things that you're articulating at the base of the pyramid is also that there's more conflict results when you start to try and go towards more, I don't know if they're more degraded, but sort of like lower level sources.
Yeah, so this sort of cosmic kind of energy, as you travel down the energy pyramid, it increases the amount of conflict in your society, increases the amount of environmental damage. Conflict, for example, now that we're mining our oil instead of drilling for it, you know, we see huge conflicts here in the Lower Mainland. Burnaby Mountain, for example, is one of the, I follow Lynn Cornby, she's my subject for the Burnaby Mountain section, and just seeing, you know, this, I think it was the second largest protest in Canadian history, environmental protest. And we're seeing this kind of, Naomi Klein is also in the film, and she talks about the concept of blockadia, this, roving transnational protest movement that pops up everywhere. The extreme energy pops up. And so going forward, we're going to see a lot more as we extract these resources more and more, we're going to see a lot more conflict than we've ever seen.
Why did you choose to frame the issue from an economic point of view? Because obviously this stuff's pretty crappy for the environment.
So I had the experience in my filmmaking career of making Whitewater Black Gold is primarily focused on water issues and what have you. And I always would get that question at a screening afterwards. Someone would say, well, yeah, we get it. It's bad for the environment. The tar sands are bad. I get it, you know. But we need these kinds of things for our economic, healthy economic future. And I said, well, that's an interesting question. Is it actually good for the economy? And the more I sort of explore that, the more I realized, you know, it's an epic fail. And that our society, if we continue, we will fail as a civilization if we continue down this road. It doesn't make money. It doesn't give us energy. Why are we doing this again? I can't remember why. Yeah, so.
Now, you said that you wanted to give voice to some of the people who are on the front lines and who are actually being impacted by these unconventional energy extraction progress. You mentioned a few people that you talked to, but tell us more about that.
Sure. So Lynn Cornby, for example, SFU professor who has shown great courage by standing up on the line, Burnaby Mountain, against, you know, Richard Kinder, a Texas-based billionaire, who's actually got the gall to sue our citizens. Absolutely outrageous. And she showed great courage in standing up to that, despite the fact that she could have lost everything, right? So that was a really compelling thing locally. Also in BC, Lana Lowe from the Fort Nelson First Nation, who described to me the epic amounts of they're being invaded by the frack industry, and you know, just gobbling up their water and air emissions, shooting moose while hunting and finding they have giant tumors, all that kind of stuff, just horrid stuff. Further afield, Jerry Natnine is the mayor of Clyde River, who has launched a lawsuit against the National Energy Board. And so they successfully got a moratorium on the seismic underwater bombing for another year anyway. So we'll have to see what plays out. And also John Weisheit is down in Utah. He's a Colorado River keeper, a river guide who's fighting to protect the Colorado River, a river that 36 million people depend on. So a wide variety of voices from people, and also energy economists, sort of the expert type voices, looking at energy return on investment, how, you know, we're not facing peak oil, although that's about 80 years away. Peak economy is already here. So it's just kind of a new concept for people to wrap their head around, peak economy. You know, we require fossil fuels so much to push our globalized society, to operate a globalized society, that if we're so dependent on fossil fuels and the quality of those fossil fuels is dropping, then the end of economic growth as we know it is right around the corner.
Now, I understand that filming Kinder Morgan's operations at Burnaby Mountain brought you to the attention of the RCMP. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I was obviously tensions were running high here in the Lower Mainland during that time last November. And so I had been filming on the line. I'd camped out a couple nights at Burnaby Mountain, and I wanted to get some cover footage of the actual terminal that people were talking about, where the bitumen is supposed to go to China or the US or whatever. And I thought, okay, well, let me check this out. And you can't see it from the road. So I figure, okay, I'll fly a quadcopter and visualize it and be able to see it. And I had a RCMP anti-terrorism unit, not, you know, Transport Canada, because it's a quadcopter, it's a quad, you know, Transport Canada issue. No, it's right away, it's terrorism, you know. What? And so I guess Kinder Morgan has a direct line right to
quadcopter is like a drone thing that carries drone. The camera.
Right? Yeah, it flies around and it films. So certainly, you know, there's cause for concern for quadcopters around airplanes for sure. But, you know, around ships, it's not a big deal. If it was to hit you, it would bounce off and it wouldn't even hurt a person, right? But it was very telling even before the passage of Bill C-51 to have the RCMP national security anti-terrorism person show up at my door. It was quite entertaining.
Now, there's strong opposition to these massive and you know, quite dangerous from a health standpoint, from an environmental standpoint, projects. Certainly across Western Canada and all across North America, really. What contribution do you hope the film will make to this oppositional movement?
Well, First of all, to show people, there is a very wide growing movement. I interviewed Deborah Rogers. She's a financial analyst. I interviewed her in Texas, and she quantified the costs to the bitumen industry, for example, of what the activism is costing this industry. And she quantified a figure of $19 billion in the past 5 years that pipeline delays due to activism of various kinds, you know, everything from the protester on the line to shareholder activism or whatever, every kind of protest has cost an industry an enormous sum of money. So we are winning. And so I want to sort of plug people into this wider movement that if we really mobilize, you know, and especially now the economics of this industry are not on their side, they're on our side. So you know, in the grand scheme of things, you know, this Texas billionaire is not as powerful as it seems. So we should really push back. And so part of that, and also to create a new conversation on economic alternatives, you know, steady state economy, biophysical economics is what Charles Hall, one of the subjects I interviewed, talks about, you know, economics that actually, you know, as if people and planet actually mattered, which is not the kind of economic system we have right now. It's failing to meet the vast majority of needs, majority of the vast people failing to meet their needs, you know, with or without climate change, right? So we need to have ideas about different alternatives that we can implement.
What stage is the film at now, and what efforts need to happen to get it to completion?
So right now the stage, we're in a rough cut stage, and I'm shopping it around, showing it to broadcasters and things like that. I was recently in Norway to pitch it at a film forum, and so that went really well. And essentially, so I'm at the rough cut stage. I need completion financing. So as such, I'm doing a crowdfunding campaign. People who want to find out more about it can go to endsofearthfilm.com, endsofearthfilm.com. And I'm, yeah, writing grant proposals, things like that, and I'm hope to have a film by the end of the fall, so pretty soon. I've been at it for 2.5 years, so it's time this thing came out.
Yeah. It's been great talking to you today, David. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with David LaValle. He's the director producer of a film in the making, To the Ends of the Earth, and you can find out more, as he says, and support the film via its crowdfunding effort at endsofearthfilm.com.